I think it's to be unencumbered by that's kind of why I like to live like I do. I like to be flexible and to give myself, to take advantage of the freedom as much as possible. And then mentally, I think to keep an open mind about things and to not be stuck with rigid dogmas. That sounds very highfalutin too. Like freedom is out there and you just have to kind of grab it. You could ignore it and just see it as something in the distance. But I try to grasp it and I try to embody it in my everyday actions and thoughts.
You are a driven international professional or manager, have achieved quite a bit already, but are asking yourself from time to time, what do I really want? How do I want to work and live? Then this is your podcast. I'm Gina Friedrich, career and life coach for people who want to actively shape their future. Every second Thursday, I release interviews for you with inspiring, successful, as well as renowned international personalities from the world of business, NGO, and sports. They all will share with you what these questions mean to them, how they handled obstacles in their lives, and shaped their journey to where they are today. You are curious and don't want to miss anything? Sign up for this podcast right here. And now, let yourself be inspired on your very personal journey towards the future that you wish for. Konnichiwa, and great to have you here listening to episode 41 of my podcast. In this interview, you will get to know Kent Foster, whom I met on the Japanese island Ishigaki just a few days ago. Kent was born in San Francisco, and when I was asking him for his profession, he said, "I'm a traveler," and this since 1986. In these decades of traveling, he has had chest pains in Zimbabwe, giardia in Nepal, heat exhaustion in India, food poisoning in Burma, and has suffered through operations in Vietnam, Hungary, and many more. Kent is working for high-tech companies in Silicon Valley as an IT professional, for example at Yahoo, which allows him to travel and to compensate for lost money from pickpocket in Turkey, speeding tickets in Costa Rica, Australia, or Czech Republic. In this adventurous talk, Kent shares his beliefs on the special things in life only showing when you're open to them, which could mean not to have a perfect finalized plan when taking off. You'll hear why he enjoys it so much living somewhere for a year, understanding the people and the culture, yeah, and also living like the locals do. Listen how he started his traveler life and freed himself, physically and mentally, from so many things, which give him the flexibility and freedom now, without any feeling of ever regretting any taken decision. Why finding your own path requires not being afraid of taking some risks, how he makes it through moments of doubt, and why traveling does not have to be expensive. All this and more you'll hear now. So get ready to listen to some personal adventures. Hi, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Kent, we met a few weeks ago, I think it was by now, and we are here on Ishigaki in Japan, and you're actually the first in-person interview I'm having abroad, so I'm also, again, as usual, but even a bit more excited to be here with you, and yeah, the situation here in Japan for us also changed a bit, so even finding a place where we could have this interview was not the easiest thing. And we both actively decided on being stranded here in on Ishigaki in Japan. I don't know if there are a few words that you would like to share that in regards to how everything feels for you being here now, longer than planned from what I understood.
Well, I'm very happy I'm here. And it was one of the few smart decisions I made. I was in Istanbul. I was in Cappadocia in Turkey, actually, and I was thinking to myself, the world is closing around me, and I don't know where to go, and I realized Japan might be the best place, because I like Japan, I've been here many times, and I thought, well, if I'm going to be stuck somewhere, I should go to Japan. And then I was in Nagano-ken, and it was getting a little cold there, and I thought, I'll just take my chances and go to Ishigaki, and I'm really glad I'm here. I'm so glad I'm here, and at the same time, I wish everyone I know was here, because so many people are suffering now, and it's a tough time, and I wish they all had the advantages that I have.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, good to know that the love for Japan is something that we share, because I've also spent many, many months in my life here already. But what was something that made you smile today?
Something that made me smile today is I'm at a guest house that I share with some Japanese people. And every time I go into the kitchen, I'm always impressed by what they're doing. And I had to take a picture of one couple is staying in a room, and I had to take a picture of their breakfast. And it was so beautiful, and it looked so elaborate. And it's the equivalent of an American putting a Pop-Tart in the toaster. But they had like 10 bowls and the tofu and the tsukemono, the pickled vegetables and the salmon. It was so, and for them, it was nothing. It was nothing. And it was just, they didn't know why I even wanted to take a picture of their breakfast. But it made me smile. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, actually, the amazing way the Japanese prepare everything and they make it look amazing, that's really impressive. So our listeners already got the chance to hear a bit more about you, but why don't you tell us, who is Kent Foster?
We're starting with the complicated questions, I can see. Yeah, so Japanese make that sound. Well, I would say I'm a traveler, which sounds very highfalutin and or pompous, but I essentially that's what I do. I do what I can to travel as much as I can. And I do jobs mostly to travel. Sometimes they align with traveling, sometimes they're completely different, but I like to travel as much as I can. How's that for an answer?
A good start. Thank you very much. Yeah, when I've asked you, like when we first met, if you want to be part of this podcast and if I could interview you about your path that actually brought you to where you are today, what was one of your first thoughts?
My first thought was if I had a path, and then I thought it over, and it's these simple questions are the most challenging, and I even had to talk over with a friend, and he's, you know, sometimes the journey is the path, and even wrapping my head around that sometimes, of course, yeah, usually when you're traveling, the journey is much more fun than actually getting to the destination, or fun in a different way. So how that aligns with the kind of people that you interview, I really had to give a lot of thought to.
You have a blog that I took a look at. It's dromomaniac.com, thedromomaniac.com, which actually means the uncontrollable urge to wander, which again is a nice way of saying what you've just described to us. And the subline is the science and philosophy of one-way travel. What is actually driving you to follow this urge to wander? What lies behind that? Is there anything that you could share with us?
Well, I think it's basically that. I'm just a very curious person. I like to see new things and new places. And the one way idea is just to go and see what happens. And don't be constricted by making a plan, or just have a vague idea of a plan, but not like, you know, on day 14, I'm going to do this, and day 50. I think if you do that, you're closing yourself off to what you see around you. And I think that's the joy and splendor of traveling, is to just the people you see, the events you might come across, the special things that only show themselves when you are open to them. When my very first trip, this philosophy I got from a Danish traveler named Jakob Holt, and he wrote a book called American Pictures, and it was just a simple thing of him traveling around America. And nobody believed his story, so someone sent him a camera, and he just took pictures, and it was, even then, people didn't believe his stories. But this I'm nowhere near as intrepid as he, but his spirit really affected me, and that's really why I wanted to travel and keep traveling.
I completely agree. The chance to see the world, experience cultures, meet people. For me, actually, I have to say that traveling is the biggest luxury in the world that one can have, and especially the fact that you also learn so much about yourself, right? I don't know if there's an experience or something that you could share that where you would say, okay, this was really like one key experience that actually changed or had an impact on how I look at the world, how I look on life and work and so on.
Well, I think it's a collective thing. And for Americans, I'm always trying to get Americans to travel, because I think just the experience of going, you don't have to go far. You don't have to go far. Americans, you can go to Mexico. You can go to southern Mexico, maybe somewhere not near where tourists typically go, but get to know your neighbors. Go to Canada even. It's so eye-opening to see outside of your country and to think differently. And there's an old adage that no president would bomb another country if they had visited it as a 20-year-old backpacking around, which is maybe naive and simplistic. But I really seriously think that if people could travel more, they would have a different view of the world, which in turn would have a different mindset that I think can only be positive.
Yeah. So is there maybe one that you could share, one important development experience that you went through that had a difference in your life?
Well, I had been traveling and traveling and traveling, and finally I stopped and I accepted a job teaching English in Hungary, in a provincial town called Pécs in southern Hungary. And that, just to be able to stop, and because I am maybe too addicted to have these new experiences and I go, 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 go. But just stopping and being in Hungary for a year and settling in and making better friends, deeper friends, just to observe how other people live and what they're doing. I wouldn't say it's a cataclysmic aha moment I had, but I would say that made a great impression on me, to actually live as a Hungarian would. Making the same salary that a Hungarian teacher would make. And all that meant, and it was when I went to Hungary, I thought, oh, this will be great. I'll go to Budapest every weekend and it's 3-hour train ride away. But then like a week's work would be, you know, the train ticket cost, and maybe that's an exaggeration, not a week's worth, but it was a lot. You know, I didn't have the money to travel. So I lived like Hungarians did. And that in itself was fantastic. It was fantastic. In the beginning, I thought, oh, this is going to be a nightmare. But it was really a wonderful time.
And he says that while I see him smile, just for you guys listening. But Kent, how did it all start? So what was this trigger moment to really say, like, you know what, I'll travel and I just follow this need to see the world, experience all these things that are not a typical thing for other people to do. And I mean, it takes a lot of bravery to actually take that step. So what was this initial moment that actually led to leaving your home country and travel the world?
Well, after college, a friend and I were going to go travel to Europe. And at the time, I wasn't so gung-ho about traveling. And I just thought, well, this will be fun. You know, it's my best friend. We'll travel around. And right before we were about to go, he said, you know, another friend, a female friend, wanted to come. And I thought, okay, well, that's fine. And then I quickly realized I'd be the third wheel in this relationship. And the minute we got to Europe, they decided they wanted to go south and I wanted to go north. And so suddenly I'm on my own and I hitchhiked. I was hitchhiking, which I had never really done before. And so I was just kind of thrown into the water, and which I think I responded pretty well to. And that really, I'm thinking, well, where should I go? I'll go to Finland. What do I know about Finland? I know zero about Finland. Maybe Lasse Vir, an Olympic runner, or, you know, nothing. And going to Eastern Europe, and I knew nothing. But this is how I became to grow a little bit and learn a little bit. And just throwing me in a different situation. And I came home and I thought, well, that was a nice trip. That was something. And I got a simple job. And then after a while, I thought, you know, I wonder what Australia is like, and I wonder what New Zealand is like, and Fiji. And so I went there, and then basically it's a variation on a theme ever since.
And I would say this is, at least for me, listening to you, this is, I think, a dream that many people have, to actually being able to just follow this feeling and doing it. And even I am smiling now and my eyes are shining listening to you. And I was traveling a lot already in my life. But I was just wondering, taking this decision, how did your family and friends back in the US react to that? Did they support you, or what were your experiences there? Because I can imagine that not everyone was supportive on a young person deciding to just travel and not coming back home.
I think they just don't know what to make of it, or they think, well, he'll get it out of his system, or many people still think I work for the CIA. You know, they're just convinced this whole thing is these frayed collars, and it's all a sham, and I have to talk into my collar to report back to HQ. That's my family, believe it or not. It's, again, as an American, it's a very strange thing, I think. And after a while, it becomes very extreme, because who really does this? I mean, some people do this in their 20s, or even for a gap year or their 20s, and then they think, okay, well, I've done that. But to do it over and over again and travel, it is a lot. It is pretty extreme. I don't really know how they regard that. I think people are amazed by it, because they would like to do it, but not for this long. So they would love to drop everything and put a backpack on, or a rolling suitcase, whatever, and to see the things I've seen. But they realize there are some sacrifices too to do this kind of thing. How they regard me, I'm not really sure.
But you had no one very close around you that tried to talk you out of it?
Sometimes they say, you know, I went to Syria just before things were bad, and people were saying, oh, you know, you must be scary, or we're going to hitchhiking around Africa, and I say, no, you know, the scary thing is coming back to America. There's no scarier country than America. I fear for myself much more in America than almost anywhere else in the world. Almost. I mean, some situations are a little bit weird, but I try to convince my friends of that too, but it's hard for them to join me sometimes or to take the step and do it out for themselves.
And was there ever a time when you felt like, I mean, just quickly, since how many years are you actually sticking to this amazing way of enjoying the world?
Well, I graduated from college in 1986. So let's say 20, a lot of years. And so almost every year since, I've been traveling at least 6 months of the year.
So thanks, because I think this is very important for people listening now to know that this really is like a long time.
And that I'm really old.
I'm not going to comment on that. Fresh and shiny and smiling a lot. But I was just wondering if you yourself, with this plan that you said like is basically not having a plan, but saying that you spent half of a year traveling, is there ever a moment, or did you ever have a moment of doubt or the feeling of this maybe not being the right thing anymore?
Yeah. I worked for a high-tech company in Silicon Valley, where I'm from. I'm a native. I was born in San Francisco and I grew up in Silicon Valley. And I worked for a company and they would let me come and go at a moment's notice almost. And I loved that flexibility. And then one time I came back and they said, you know, we got bought by a bigger company, and you either have to come with us to the bigger company and you'll have a nice job and you can do the same thing. It's a very comfortable life, I realized. Or we have to say goodbye because we can't keep doing the same thing now that we've been bought by this bigger company. And I thought about it because Silicon Valley, this, you know, it can be a very comfortable life and all, you know, all the creature comforts and these things. And I was a little tired of traveling and the go, go, go nature of it. But I just decided, no, I'll take my chances. And maybe if I do want to come back to that company, I will. And I did, in fact, go back to that company many years later, again, working temporarily. But I just decided it was kind of more interesting to travel than to not travel, which sounds very, I don't know, a buzz. I always say it's like a buzzkill of an answer. But I just enjoyed seeing the world and seeing what I can learn from it.
Then it seems like you're actually having a very good balance there in staying home, working, having a different setup, and then still knowing that there's the time where you're able to explore the world. Looking back at the journey that you went through so far, what would you say was the hardest decision you ever had to make?
Well, I calling myself a traveler and I'm not as intrepid as I would like to be, and I kind of wish I pushed myself a little bit more. Maybe do more hiking to different places, maybe visit a country that's tough to get to, or my dream place is Iran. I would love to go to Iran, but they're not, where our countries haven't been getting along lately, and it is possible to go there, but not on the terms I would like. But still, I think I should go there. I'm so fascinated by it. I would love to do it.
So from what I understood, this is a decision that you did not take yet. It's still possible that you might end up there. But maybe in general terms, like in regards to leaving the US in a certain moment, even though maybe things were working very well, or maybe leaving towards a country where you had no clue what's happening, you had no clue how to make it through 6 months of traveling or so on. So maybe there's like really a key decision that, yeah, that was very important, that was not an easy one to make.
But the thing about my life is that it's all very easy for me to pick up and go. If I did make a mistake, I could always go back, and I'm not tied. I don't have a mortgage. I don't own a car. I tell people I'm homeless, which isn't the nicest thing to hear sometimes. I've made my life easy in that sense. And nowadays, I've got my life down to about all my possessions fit into about 10 or 12 apple-sized boxes. And some hardcore travelers say, that many? Where other people are like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. I can never do that. So I've tried to simplify my life that way, that if I haven't made a mistake, I can really learn from it and maybe go back and do it. And like you say, I can go to Iran. I can do a lot of things. I do have that flexibility.
Yeah, you call it flexibility, and I would also call it freedom, because it sounds like you really were able to free yourself from many things. What does freedom, or the word freedom, mean to you?
I think it's to be unencumbered by that's kind of why I like to live like I do. I like to be flexible and to give myself, to take advantage of the freedom as much as possible. And then mentally, I think to keep an open mind about things and to not be stuck with rigid dogmas. That sounds very highfalutin too. Like freedom is out there and you just have to kind of grab it. You could ignore it and just see it as something in the distance. But I try to grasp it, and I try to embody it in my everyday actions and thoughts.
I can imagine traveling the way you do, and also just sometimes just taking off and not knowing what lies around the next corner and what is the next adventure that you might follow. I can imagine that there are times that also might be very tough, being far away from home, not speaking the language, and many, many other things that are uncertain or that you don't know yet. What motivates you and keeps you going when things are not that easy throughout this journey that you're on?
Well, to answer the correct way from your first question, I'm very conscientious of the fact that having an American passport is a luxury, having money is a luxury, having time is a luxury, having few ties can be a luxury. And I meet people all the time in the so-called developing world, and they would love to be able to do what I do, or maybe they even see it though in a negative way, like, you know, you're wasting your time and your money, and why not do something or do something constructive with your time and money. But just the fact that I have that option is an incredible luxury, and I'm very conscientious of that, and I don't take that for granted. Please tell me again the second question.
What motivates you when things are a bit tough?
When things get tough. Sometimes it's just tough of my own doing, and I just have to stop and take a deep breath and realize, you know, countless times, of course, when you're sick in another country and it's cold and it's raining and you don't know anybody and, you know, you think, what am I doing here? And I was in India once, and I was in Varanasi, and that's a tough place in the best of times, I think. I mean, I'm always amazed by young travelers now going there, where I thought, you know, I have to build up to go to a place like India. But I got sick, and I was staying in a cheap hotel, and I told myself, don't do this, Kent. Just get a nice hotel, eat well, see a doctor if you have to, don't pinch pennies. So I got the nicest hotel I could find, and it was only $8 a night, and I was kicking myself, like, what are you doing? But I think just kind of stopping yourself and thinking about what you're doing and to get back on the right track. Because you can kind of get in a spiral. And if you go for months and months at a time, it can kind of be detrimental in a way. I think you do have to kind of take a break and look at yourself and see where you are. And I'd say kind of like a personal state of the road address to see what you're doing, what you want to do, what should you be doing, what could you be doing. I think it's easy to get caught in a rabbit hole, but then you got to stop yourself and find out, well, what is the motivation for where I am right now and what could I be doing? So again, that's the freedom I have, and I'm thankful I do have that.
So a couple of good questions help you through times when you actually should take a step back to reflect, and that I think many of the people listening, and also myself, of course, know how valuable this can be to actually press the hold button and take the time to ask yourself these questions. What actually now, looking back, what would be a question that you wish you would have asked yourself earlier in life?
I'm very envious of the people, I admire people who start foundations or who start schools or have some relationship to something that they can continually come back on and see how it's growing or not growing, and to work on it to make it grow. Try to build something. Where I've been a little bit more scatterbrained, and I kind of want to, in the beginning, I just want to see as many countries as I could and just see everything. And then I thought, well, it's nice to go back to certain places, but I do kind of admire the people who are kind of at least go back once a year or something, or once every 2 years, and try to develop something, do something constructive. And I, of course, I can still do that, and I can do that. But in the beginning, I wish I kind of had that focus more.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that so openly. If you would now imagine a close friend or someone you meet along the way, maybe even being caught in structures that are different to the ones that you chose, if this person is actually trying to find what it really is that that drives them, something that is really like the core of what they would like to do and what they would like to spend their time on, like ideally finding the perfect job that adds to their own values and builds on the core strength that a person has to feel satisfied with what he or she is doing. What is an advice or maybe an own experience that you would share with such a person that is looking for an answer to the question of what is my path? What do I really want?
Yeah, I think that's a tough one because I don't know how receptive people are to my advice generally, but I think maybe this might be a big stretch, but just the fact that people see that I don't worry about the day-to-day things so much, and I do live very freely in a sense. You know, it's easy for me to say, take the risk. What do you have to lose? Or, you know, or what you do have to lose, is that really a huge thing to lose? Or maybe you think it is. I try not to be too heavy-handed with giving advice, especially if it's unsolicited. I can only think that people who see how I live, it think, well, he's doing okay, you know, or he appears to be doing okay. So maybe it is okay to make a big change. Could be a stretch, but that's where I'm going to go with it.
So Kent, I'm sure that many people listening are currently asking themselves, how do you manage to actually travel that much? How do you finance all that?
Well, I do everything quite cheaply. You know, I'm not staying in 5-star hotels, obviously, as you look around this barren room. Traveling does not have to be expensive at all. I mean, I find these, and I fly one-way tickets all the time, and everyone has it's a very common idea that buying a one-way ticket last minute is expensive. And I say that's very rarely true because I always do that. I almost always do that. And that's part of my website, the dromomaniac.com, is the idea of, you know, it doesn't have to cost a fortune to try to travel. And often just living close to the ground and staying and living cheaply, that's the best way to go about things. You come in better contact with local people. If you're staying in a 5-star hotel, you're like in a penthouse. You might as well be in a penthouse. And there's a particular organization I'd like to mention called Servas. It's an Esperanto word, and it means we serve. And it's kind of like the grandfather to couch surfing, where couch surfing is you're kind of meeting people and maybe staying with them, maybe not, but you're hanging out with them. But Servas is kind of the pre-internet precursor to this. I mean, they're still around now, and they get angry when I talk about them being pre-internet because they have an ugly website. They had an ugly website. The president and the organization got on me about this. But it's a great way to get in touch with people. It's a simple thing. If you visit someone and you stay in their home for 2 nights at a time, and you just live like they live. Maybe they're the type who wants to go out and have a drink with you. Maybe they're the stay-at-home type. I'm a suburban boy. It was nice to stay on a farm with somebody and see what farm life was like. And just, it's a great thing to do around the world. And I really enjoyed that.
Says the guy who just invited me to his room where we are actually sitting. It's like, it could be a therapy setup, but it's not. We were actually laughing coming in here. No, but I completely agree. And yeah, you've mentioned India, and I'm sure there's so many more countries that are making people curious to travel there, but still it is challenging. I've spent more than half a year in India as well. And I have to say that there were a lot of learnings about myself and the way I look at things and the world and also people. And I was impressed by the way a lot of people I met were thinking about their situation. And it made me think a lot. In general, looking at the path that you took so far, what would you say was the biggest challenge that you actually were facing?
Well, India is kind of the place, I think. I think everyone in their lives has to go to India at some point. And I say I have a love-hate relationship with it, but I've been there 5 times, and I look forward to going back. So as much as I find it challenging, really challenging and really tough and really makes you confront a lot of personal issues, and I just think India is everything. So, and I really do want to go back. Now they've made the visa is much easier now for everyone, so there's less of an excuse to not go. To work myself up to go to India, I went to Bangladesh. Because when you're traveling and you hear anyone who's been to India, I would interview them and ask them. I'm really annoying on the road. If I hear some people talking about travels, I always ask them and I interview them and I always want to pick their brain. And I wasn't really sure I was up for India. You know, I hear the stories and how intense it is, but how amazing it is. And I thought to myself, if I can handle 5 days in Bangladesh, I can handle India. So I decided I took a one-way ticket to Bangladesh, not knowing that this was the time of their very first fair and free elections. It was a daughter of a president who had been executed against the wife of a president who had been executed. I'm not even sure. This was in the 90s. And it was just chaos. And I got to a hotel and there was a Dutch photographer there and he was like, what are you doing here? And I was like, oh, I just came to have a look. And he looked at me, are you crazy? What are you? And that was an amazing experience. And I'll never forget that. But I thought to myself, okay, well, I'm ready. I think I could do India. So, but I went to Nepal first and then I went to India. But just being confronted by, you know, all the typical things, you know, the language, the food, the people, the things you're not used to, the things that are different, the everything. It's just everything in that part of the world. And I just became addicted. And I thought, well, this is great. You know, I can't wait to, you know, India is huge. And that's, the, you know, the South Asia is amazing. And I've never been to Pakistan. And that's a challenge. That would be a challenge too. And again, I don't harp on the fact I have an American passport, but it does present challenges. And you really have to think of, a lot of these challenges are in my head, of course, or maybe not. I think if I went to Pakistan or Iran, I am not worried at all about my personal safety, within reason, of course. But just the idea that I think so many people think, oh, the minute you step off the plane, you're a target. And don't tell me from America and put a Canadian flag on your backpack and this kind of stuff. And I go, no, I am not worried about that at all. And I think that would be very challenging, but it's got to be so rewarding. And I really look forward to that. I think Pakistan is something I'm going to do.
So many questions popped up in my head now. But what made me smile now was that you said you're actually interviewing other people in different countries as well, because you're so curious. What kind of questions, or maybe you have one or two, that you usually are interested in knowing? And what is an answer that maybe surprised you a lot?
Well, I'll give you an example. I went to Vietnam in 1992, and this was before America had relations with Vietnam. They weren't allowing many visitors in. It was that was maybe one of the most amazing trips I've ever done. And I didn't know anything. A Lonely Planet didn't have much to say. You had to bring cash with you. There's no you couldn't use traveler's checks. You couldn't use ATM cards or anything. And so what I did was I was in Singapore. I went to the airport and went to the incoming flight from Saigon. And when people got off the plane, I was at the airport. And if I saw someone who looked even vaguely like a traveler, I would ask them questions. And a lot of it's just basic stuff. Like, is it easy to find a place to stay? Is it, how did you get around? What did you think? Where did you go? Anything you wouldn't do? Really annoying stuff. I'm that horrible person you see at the guest house who's talking your head off, trying to get away from me. Like, yeah, maybe later. You know? That's kind of why I started my website in a way. I mean, a lot of it's like, this is what I'm doing. I'm trying to give that same information back and to encourage people to travel, especially to travel alone. And so I try to take it all in, the practical stuff and what the highlights for them were and what their frame of mind was a little bit. Like, why did you go? Is there something you heard, maybe that you didn't see, that you wish you had been to, wish you had seen or something?
Yeah, but talking about all these countries, is there, I mean, do you have a list or are you just following your gut feel in regards to what the next stop should be? How do you actually make a plan?
Sometimes it's basically where I am in the world at that time and how much time I have. One of my little hobbies I have is popping in on strange embassies in far-flung countries. Like Russia had been a really hard visa for Americans to get. I mean, they'll let you in. That's not hard, but it's just the process is incredible. I was in Burma, Myanmar, and I just thought I'd pop by the Russian embassy. And the ambassador was like sitting out on the stoop smoking a cigarette. And I went there and he looked at me and didn't understand what I was doing there. But we were talking and he says, come back tomorrow. I got a visa and a snap. And I thought, oh, now I have to go to Russia. Or I go to North Korean embassies in wherever I am, or Iranian embassies. Just I know what they're going to say, but it's fun for me just to talk to them. And
yeah, wow. So having this freedom and this flexibility that you actually have right now, I was just wondering if there is something else that you would say is not negotiable for you in your life.
Well, most people would crack that a full-time job is not negotiable because I seem to rarely have one. That would pin me down. I would say maybe going on a package tour, which is ironic because I'm also a sometime freelance tour guide, or I lead tours, and I'm not the person who would take a tour. So I see both sides of that coin. But kind of the idea of just being stuck in a tour and okay, from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, we're doing this, and 10 o'clock, when I'm running the tour, of course, that's what I want to do, and that's how I want it done. I don't want people arguing with me, and I want everyone to do the same thing, but the idea of taking a tour is something that I just don't understand, really. I just kind of, because what if you're doing something you like? You want to stay longer, or if you go there and you, I don't want to spend 2 hours here, this is a waste of time, let's move on to the next thing.
Okay, so really being completely free in scheduling your day. And given everything that you've experienced, and I mean, you've shared so much with us now, what is something that you would say surprised you the most looking back at your life until now?
I'm surprised I'm still doing it, because when I was in my 20s, I would look at people in their 40s and go, oh man, come on, give it up. You know, what are you doing? And I had no mindset of what my life would be like later. And so I just looked at people in their 40s and 50s and go, are you really? You're still traveling? And now that I'm in my 50s, and I just think, I wish I had more respect for, I was a little bit out of my own head a little bit about other travelers back then, because I like being a traveler with more experience and more life experience, was what I mean. Because I think I look at things a different way. You know, I go back to like Hungary as an example. Hungary is a place I went on my very first trip, and I went back again and again, and then finally I decided to teach English there. And that's a country that's kind of grown with me in a way. And I have friends that from that very first trip, and it's interesting to see how they've grown and I've grown, and the things we believe or disagree on and their lives, and how, you know, I just think it's a country that's grown with me, and it makes me take stock in myself every time I go back. I always want to go back to Hungary to kind of see where I'm feeling about myself and how I stand with myself. And because that's one of the few countries that I go back to almost all the time.
Yeah, so let's make sure that whenever you go into that direction, you pass by Germany, because that's not too far away. Kent, that was super inspiring and exciting. And I can only say thank you for sharing all that so openly with me and the listeners. And now I'm looking forward to spending a bit more time with you, chatting about the details and all the countries that you've mentioned.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor. I don't really think out loud about these questions a lot, but it's nice to hear them. Thank you very much for having me.
Are you currently asking yourself what it is that drives you in order to shape your journey consciously? Let us find out how I could support you as a career and life coach and book your free initial consultation. Just get in touch via coaching@gina-friedrich.com. Thanks for spending your time with me again, and have a happy day ahead.